My name is Myron Falk, and it's my honor to be your moderator for this annual town meeting. A member of the Sudbury clergy will address the hall. This year, we are privileged to have Dr. Richard Harding of the United Methodist Church to address the hall. Dr. Harding? Excuse me, Dr. Harding, before you start. Those folks on the floor of the auditorium, on this side and this side, behind those gates, there are not enough seats either in the balcony or here. You should go down to the cafeteria if you've already checked in. You'll be able to vote there, and you will be able to speak to this hall from there. So please, please go down to the cafeteria. Thank you. Dr. Harding.
I'd like to invite us to a moment of silence in honor of the life and leadership of Pope John Paul II. Will you join me in a moment of silence? Amen. I also, like those of us who may have forgotten that today is the 37th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and we remember and give thanks for him tonight. And let us pray. And Holy One, the source of our lives and of the world in which we live, you have created us to live in community. And we come together tonight as one of those communities who have serious and difficult decisions to make. And we bow now and pray that your great spirit may move amongst us as we consider what is before us at this town meeting. We give you thanks for our leaders, those who are elected and those appointed, those hired, and the countless number of volunteers who join them in seeking to make life good for all who live and work here. Help us, O God, to keep in mind the words of one of the great prophets who spoke your requirement of us to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with you. And O God, constantly remind us of the compassion of Pope John Paul II, and the dream of Martin. Bless us now, O God, as we move into the responsibilities set before us. Amen.
Thank you, Dr. Harding. As you know, each year we have the Pledge of Allegiance led by a student at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. This year, the individual selected for that honor is Kevin Jones. I'm going to read some quotes from the LS teacher who recommended Kevin, Bill Snow. Kevin is the son of Donald and Nancy Jones of Thunder Road. He's an outstanding student in his senior year at LS with plans to pursue a focus in science at the collegiate level next September. Kevin's myriad of school-based activities include participation on the LS cross-country team and alpine and cross-country ski teams. He is co-captain of the alpine team this year. Other school memberships include his class steering committee, science Olympiad in engineering, robotics team, Department of Energy Science bowl team, the sailing team, and he also is active in peer tutoring. Outside of school, Kevin has been an extremely active voice for juvenile diabetes research, performing endless volunteer work, doing an immense amount of fundraising, and engaging in public speaking about stem cell research. All told, Kevin's life routine has been an incredibly busy one with much personal reward. He leaves his mark this year as the winner of the DAR Award at LS. Kevin, could you lead us in the pledge?
Could you all rise, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The certified free cash, as told to us by our finance director, town accountant Sue Peterson, is $855,226. I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and the town clerk's return of mailing. I recognize Chairman Drabinski for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service, notice, and the reading of the individual articles of the warrant.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to dispense with the reading of the call of the meeting and the officer's return of service and to waive the reading of the separate articles of the warrant.
Is there a second? All those in favor, raise your cards. All opposed? I declare the vote unanimous. In this hall. It is also unanimous in the cafeteria. I'm going to make some introduction of some of the folks intimately involved in the setting up of town meeting. When I call your name, please raise your hand. To my right is Town Clerk Barbara Sierra. To her right is the Assistant Town Clerk Judy Newton, Selectman Chairman John Drabinski, Larry O'Brien, Bill Keller, Town Manager Maureen Valente, Finance Director, Town Accountant Sue Peterson, down here in front, Town Council to my left, Paul Kenny. At the view graph, we have Mary Daniels. She's the Office Supervisor for the Selectman's Office. Elaine Jones, who manages the legal department in town. And Jan Silva, the Administrative Assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Last year was my first year as moderator. Before I decided to run for the office, I did two things. I thought a lot about Tom Dignan and talked a great deal to him about what a privilege it would be to follow his outstanding 19 years. But the second thing I did was stop at Loring Parsonage to make sure that Jan Silva was still there. She's the one who prepares us for town meeting. This is Jan's last town meeting. She's retiring at the end of this year. Jan has worked in the selectman's office for 33 years. Without her competent professionalism, this town meeting would not run very smoothly. I could go on about how valuable her service has been to this town, but that would only embarrass her. So please join with me in thanking Jan for her many, many years of wonderful service to this town. She's duly embarrassed. Finance Committee Co-Chair Tracy Billig. Tracy, could you raise your hand? Co-Chair Bob Jacobson. Tracy Billig is a very important member of the Finance Committee, but not its co-chair. That belongs to Marty Raganese, Larry Rowe, Sheila Stewart, John Nicola, Bill Nealon Jr., Michael Grossberg, and Norman DeLuca. Assistant Town Manager Wayne Walker up here in front, and our Treasurer-Collector Andrea Turkelson. also here at the table. Coffee and snacks, you probably saw them as you walked through to check in tonight. It's being hosted by Sudbury's Destination Imagination. They have two teams going to the global competition. These teams, one from Loring and the other from LS, will compete at the international tournament in Knoxville, Tennessee at the end of May. They have worked all year to come up with creative, unique, innovative, and ingenious solutions to a problem called designing bridges. Tonight's refreshment table is sponsored by them. All funds raised tonight will be used to send these teams to the Destination Imagination Global Finals and for all other DI scholarships. We hope you'll come talk to them about the program and purchase some refreshments. And I am told LS asked me to announce that there's no eating of food or drinking of liquids here in the auditorium. For that, you can go to the cafeteria. A few other announcements. Right by the snack table, there is Owen Boyle of Troop 63 in Sudbury is collecting any type of used cell phone from you for donation to Verizon Telephone for his Eagle Scout project. The used cell phones will then be exchanged through Verizon, which exchanges the old phones for new phones, which are pre-programmed with 9/11 access and 30 minutes per month free service. The new phones are then distributed to domestic abuse victims and their families through the office of the Middlesex DA District Attorney's Office and Respond, a domestic abuse organization. If you missed the notice in the newspaper and you're hearing it now today for the first time, please bring any old used cell phones that you have at home. Owen will be out at the snack table today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and a week from tonight. Other announcements, volunteers are needed for the annual roadside cleanup, which will be held on Saturday, April 30. Inside the back cover of your warrant is a sign-up form with instructions. Also in the back of your warrant is a sign-up form to register your interest in serving on a town board or committee. Please consider how you might lend your talents to town government. Some committee memberships do not require a great deal of time, but all provide valuable contributions. There are also materials about this town meeting on the table opposite the checkers when you walked in, and there's also extra warrants there. And anybody who forgot their warrants, there are some over here and some at the other end of the dais here. Guest I'd like to introduce to you all is the Lincoln Sudbury Foreign Exchange student this year. Her name is Katerina Wanger, and she's from Germany. Please give her a round of applause. And I recognize Selectman Keller for an in memoriam resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. It's my honor this evening to present the in memoriam resolution. Whereas the past year has seen some very special members of the Sudbury community pass from life, and whereas these special citizens and employees have given their time and talents to enrich the quality of life in our town, now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury hereby expresses its deep appreciation for the services and gifts of the following individuals: Catherine Barton, Via Capuano, Kenneth W. Clark, Mary C. A. Clow, Dante Germanata, Edward Hughes, Ruth H. Johnson, Sally C. Jones, Beverly Ann Mills, Stanley Natanson, Dorothy Polio, Phyllis A. Sampson, Mary J. Skinnian, Francis E. White, and Marjorie A.C. Young. Be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury and town meeting assembled record for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation of their contributions to our community.
Thank you. Kevin, back in the AV room, we're running out of space in the cafeteria. Is there someone who can pull out some of the tables so we can put it along the side and accommodate some more people, please? I recognize the chair of the Board of Selectmen, John Drabinski, for a State of the Town address. Anybody who still has their cell phones on, please shut them off.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Welcome to our annual town meeting. Distinct pleasure to address you this evening, especially in this wonderful new building. It's actually quite cold in here compared to the our other accommodations, the old LS, but this is still a great building. And this building is a credit to the LS School Committee and the taxpayers of Sudbury and Lincoln. We should be proud of the structure. It's a tremendous building. State of Town Address is traditionally when the Board of Selectmen give a general overview of where we are as the board would like to see the town going. We elicit input from a variety of citizens and town boards to generally get the feel of where town would like to see us go. Our town is vibrant, financially sound, well-managed, and emotionally buoyed by the fantastic Patriots and the Boston Red Sox. Our infrastructure is in great shape, with only the police station and town hall renovations to be completed. Our community spirit is enthusiastic and welcoming, as shown by our neighbors and friends at St. Anselm's with their ongoing vigil, and our neighbors and friends at Bethel and their successful health care programs. We are very pleased with the passing of the recent override question and debt exclusion. It is our hope the town meeting will affirm this vote. However, we are concerned about the state resuming its share of costs of education, transportation projects, as well as general lottery and assistance programs. The town's current physical imbalance will not improve. With this in mind, the board has asked the town manager to expand our financial planning and to develop options for the future that will help us to alleviate the need or at least the size of potential overrides. Going forward, the board will continue to protect our environmental quality as well as Sudbury's unique sense of place. We want to retain seniors in town, and we're going to strive for housing diversity. Last year, the town acquired the Cutting and Mahoney properties, and at this town meeting, we hope you acquire the Liberty property, thus preserving our rapidly diminishing open space. In conjunction with Park and Rec, the board is and will continue to provide for playing fields and access to our ponds and streams for youth in town. Articles at this town meeting 44 and 45 will indeed complete this. In addition, Articles 47 and 48 emphasize our town's commitment to historic preservation. Also, the board will continue to support the educational excellence of K-8 and the LS school systems, as this excellence, among other excellence in this town, is what brings many people to here and what makes our property values what they are. Our biggest challenge in the years ahead will be financial. We are committed to retaining our AAA bond rating, and we've heard loud and clear about our tax structure. But at the same time, we're committed to providing essential services for all our taxpayers. Sudbury is a tremendous place to live in, not only for our natural surroundings, our historic past, and our excellent schools, but the incredible talent and dedication of many of our citizens. Our strength is the multifaceted efforts of our volunteers, town staff, and numerous organizations working together that define this community. Tonight with this town meeting, we proceed forward with great optimism. Thank you.
I understand the Finance Committee will wait until Article 4 on the budget to make its statement about the financial state of the town. Article 1. For many years, it has been a tradition at the annual town meeting to honor one of our citizens who has performed valuable service to the town by asking him or her to make the motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor my predecessor, Tom Dignan. Tom was the town moderator from 1985 to 2003. Tom graduated from Yale University undergrad and then went to University of Michigan Law School. He moved to Sudbury in 1979 with his wife, Mary Ann, and two daughters, Kelly Ann and Mary Claire. From the start, he had an avid interest in the community and always attended town meetings. His active involvement with the town began in 1982 with his appointment to the Finance Committee, where he served with distinction until 1985 when he was elected town moderator. From 1969, when I moved to Sudbury, through 2003, there were only three moderators, and Tom was unique among them for three important reasons. He was the longest, what was the laughter for? I'm not even to the punchline yet. He was the longest serving moderator among the three. He was certainly the tallest, and he was absolutely the only one who gave NCAA men's basketball scores at every single town meeting. Tom recently resigned from Rose and Gray, one of the oldest and most prestigious law firms in the country, after a 36-year distinguished legal career. This allows him to spend more time with his family, move to Florida, and of course, to golf. We all watched Tom as Mr. Moderator for 19 years. We were privileged to see his wit, wisdom, and wise counsel for every one of those 19 years. He always did everything in his power to make sure everyone was treated fairly and that both sides were heard from equally. He was a terrific role model for me. I know I have very large shoes to fill. I hope to emulate Tom with one very major exception. You'll no longer be hearing the University of Michigan basketball scores. Mr. Moderator, the floor is yours.
Accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, offices, and committees as printed in the 2004 town report or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
Is there a second? Tom, I forgot to tell you, in your absence last year, you weren't at town meeting last year, non-residents can only speak for 15 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As a preliminary matter before my prepared remarks, which should not last more than an hour and a half, I noticed that our moderator started the meeting with a rather small gavel. It wasn't even the regular town gavel, which is a very historical gavel. Some of you may not know, John Powers, one of our predecessors, referred to it as holding 350 years of history in your hand, because the gavel has inserted in it wood chips from all kinds of historical places all over the United States. But, Mr. Moderator, I found during 19 years there are times when the mellow spirit of the town does not prevail at town meeting, and you, I'm sure, are finding you can sense it when it's coming. And so I always had and want to give you now another gavel to handle things when things get rough. I should like to begin by thanking the selectmen for this great honor and privilege of presenting Article 1 at the annual town meeting. I am extremely grateful that they viewed my service to the town as worthy of such recognition. Wholly apart from the honor, it gives me an opportunity to say a public thank you to all the town officials who helped and supported me during my tenure as moderator. On such an occasion as this, it is dangerous to pick out individuals because by doing so, one perhaps is thought to be slighting others. At risk of people forming such an erroneous conclusion, I do wish to mention four particular individuals with whom I interacted over the years. The first is your longtime selectman, John Drabinski. I have known John for many years, indeed well before he became a selectman in Sudbury. His advice and counsel to me on matters of geology and earthquakes assisted me in any number of pieces of litigation in which I was involved. He is a marvelous expert witness. But tonight, I want firstly to recognize his long and excellent service to this town. Some 20 years he has unselfishly given of his time to this town. The second person I wish to acknowledge, and I wrote this before I realized the occasion was her last, was to acknowledge Jan Silver. Every year I used to tell people that the town meeting could survive the absence of any number of officials, committees, and supernumeraries. It could not survive the absence of Jan Silver. And you know what? I wonder if it is going to survive another year without her. Her patience with the moderator was endless, and her assistance on many matters irreplaceable. Third, I wish to acknowledge the many-term member of the Finance Committee, Marjorie Wallace. She never once refused an appointment to this hardworking committee and gave of her time unselfishly. In acknowledging Marjorie, I also honor many personal friends and others who accepted appointments to the Finance Committee during my run as moderator. I have often referred to these people as former friends because sometimes they felt I had understated the work and responsibility involved. In connection with that, it is a fact that any time I talk someone into serving on that committee at a social occasion, often after a libation or two, my wife, Mary Ann, required that I call the individual in the cold light of day the next morning to be sure they were willing to serve. Finally, I should like to acknowledge Ed Thompson, the former executive secretary of the town, who was one of the people, along with the great late Jack Murray, most encouraged me to get into town government and town affairs. Ed guided this town through some difficult and changing times with unfailing good humor and prodigious effort. I have been extremely lucky all my life. I am blessed with a wife of infinite patience and two marvelous kids. Professionally, I practiced for 36 years in a marvelous law firm with a group of the most able people I have ever known. This practice gave me opportunity to argue in the highest courts of this land and entree to many professional opportunities and, in turn, some wonderful, if undeserved, honors. But I want all of you to know that no award or reward I have ever or ever will ever receive will exceed in my mind the great honor that you, the people of this town, paid me by allowing me to hold that historical gavel for 19 years. I hope I returned in some measure the trust you placed in me, and I will be forever grateful for having had it. And so, Mr. Moderator, I thank you and everyone here for their patience and attention, and with that, I move the question on Article 1.
Thank you. I'd like to review some procedural matters for those of you who may be new to town meeting or those who attend and need to be refreshed. I hope everyone has reviewed the warrant and familiarized himself or herself with the summary of basic town meeting procedures and the motion primer in the beginning of the warrant on pages Roman numeral 1 and 6. Please keep in mind there's obviously no smoking in the building. Please turn all your cell phones off, put them on vibrate if necessary, and unless your name ends in MD, they shouldn't ring at all. Please give your name and address each time that you wish to speak so we can have an audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your hand. Do not, I repeat, do not stand at the two mics on either side of me on the floor. The reason for that is twofold. Back in the old days, when I first moved to town, we had runners with microphones. And then as the years went along, the lighting in the auditorium was so bad, the moderator couldn't see people raising their hands at their seats. And so we went strictly to the standing mics. There are two reasons why we're going back to the old way. One is that the lighting in this hall is excellent, and I can see everybody at their seats. Secondly, as you may have noticed when you sat down, the rows are extremely long with no aisle breaks, which means somebody in the center is going to have a great deal of difficulty getting out to a standing mic. So, raise your hand, please, to be recognized. I will recognize you, and then we'll have runners with mics pass the mics down. If you happen to be recognized and you're sitting near the end of a row, after you're recognized, please go to one of the mics on the floor. We also have runners with microphones up in the balcony, and we have mics in the cafeteria. Anybody who wishes to speak from the cafeteria will get recognized by the assistant moderator there, and we will be able to hear that person here in the hall. Did someone forget to shut off their cell phone? Kevin, are you back there? Kevin? The cafeteria is having some problem. They're getting quite an overflow crowd there. Is it possible to open up the room across the hall where we can have people sit and have them mic'd into this hall? Thank you. All motions of substance, including main motions and motions to amend, should be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. You should also give a copy to Jan Silva at the view graph in front of the hall. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the back of the hall so we can count just those folks who can vote. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern to you not to bolt the hall as soon as we have voted on that matter. There are two good reasons for that. One, you should show respect to your neighbors who have sat through that article of your concern. You ought to sit through their articles of concern. And secondly, there's something in this count called reconsideration. If you bolt the hall, someone can ask for reconsideration, and you will have left and not be able to vote on that reconsideration. I have appointed Larry Blacker as the assistant town moderator for the 2005 annual town meeting. He is a distinguished member of the bar and a recognized expert in tax-free exchanges. He's a former selectman of 6 years, a former member of the Board of Health for 3 years. He will be managing the cafeteria. Please be reminded that if you are presenting an article, you have 10 minutes to do that. Generally speaking, the rule of thumb is if you can't convince the hall in 10 minutes, you're not going to convince them in more than 10 minutes. Likewise, if you're not presenting but wish to speak on an article, our town bylaw says you have 5 minutes. And I have a timer which I'll use and try to be fair to everybody. Bear with me. Mr. Black is going to make some announcements to get people squared away in the cafeteria. And while he's doing that, I'm going to have to ask the people who are standing up. Okay, folks who aren't seated in seats and are voters, I strongly suggest that you head to the cafeteria because your vote can't be counted here. I can only count your vote if you are sitting in a seat. There are a couple seats over there. There's a couple seats here in front. There's one over there and one over here. Raise your hand if you have some seats next to you. That's great. So you folks can actually find seats here, please. Please raise your hand if you have a seat vacant next to you. While that's happening, who are making presentations, that if you're moving in the words of the article, that's fine. We all have our warrant with us, and we know what it says. On the other hand, if you're making a motion that does not appear word for word as it is in the warrant, I will ask you to explain to the hall the exact difference between your motion and what appears in the warrant. The reason for that is because most of us have read the warrant, know what it says, but we don't know what your motion is if it's different. Counting the hall will take considerably longer than usual. Part of the reason is because of the overflow crowd that we have, but also it's difficult because of the very long rows that we have. So please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you're absolutely sure that I have miscounted. I assure you that I will first ask for a count of raising your cards while you're sitting in your seats. If I'm still not sure, I'll ask you to stand and hold your cards. And if I'm still not sure, I guarantee you I'll be the one to ask for the head count. Also, rules of decorum. There'll be no clapping, no hissing, no booing, no audible sounds, whether they're directed for or against a speaker or a town official, before, during, or after a presentation. Also, speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed to a voter, a speaker, or a town official. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on each article. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. That brings us to the consent calendar. If you'll turn to pages Roman numeral 3, 4, and 5 of the warrant, what we'll do is I will call out the numbers of the articles one by one. If any voter has any doubt about passing any motion or wishes an explanation of any subject on the consent calendar, the voter should stand and without a mic say the words hold in a loud, clear voice when the number is called. I will then inquire of the speaker as to whether the request is to hold for a question or for a debate. If the purpose of the request was merely to ask a question, an attempt at that time will be made to obtain a satisfactory answer. And if that occurs, the article will remain on the consent calendar absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of the request was to hold the article for debate, the article will be removed from the consent calendar and restored to its original place in the warrant to be brought up and debated and voted on in the usual way. No voter should hesitate to exercise their right to remove matters from the consent calendar. It is the view of the voters as to the need for debate that is supreme, not that of town officials who have put together the consent calendar. Having said that, it is hoped that voters will remove articles from the consent calendar only in cases of genuine concern. In past years, it has occasionally happened that articles were removed from the consent calendar and when reached in the normal course, passed unanimously without debate, thus indicating that the initial removal request was perhaps not fully considered before being exercised. So I will now read number by number, from the consent calendar. If you want to hold, stand up and yell, hold, either in the balcony, the floor of the auditorium, or in the cafeteria.
Gardner, Longfellow Road. Respectfully, Mr. Moderator, I believe that question one has been moved but not voted on.
Absolutely correct. Thank you for pointing that out. And that, by the way, is an excellent example of what a point of order should be. If the moderator has made a mistake, no hesitation, you should stand up and say point of order and point out that mistake. So I will ask on Article 1, all those in favor, please raise your cards. All those opposed. The vote on Article 1 is unanimous. We're on the consent calendar now. When I say I'll read the numbers slowly, we'll start with Article 3. Article 18. Article 19. Is that for a question or debate? Can you ask the question now, please, when a mic is brought to you? Cove, 14 Churchill Street. Some of the fee increases in this article are quite substantial. I believe one of them is 100%, from $50 to $100. And yet the justification that's printed in the warrant seems to be nothing stronger than, well, these fees haven't been raised lately, and other towns are charged comparable amounts. It says that this will bring the fees more in line with the cost of actually providing the service, although not actually cover that cost. I wonder how we know that. Has anyone actually calculated what it costs to provide these services, and whether the fees that we're getting now are sufficient, or is it just because we can get a little more money for the town and so we should do it?
Thank you, Mr. Cove. Anybody from the Finance Committee or the town manager wish to answer that question? Town Manager Maureen Valente.
Is Building Inspector Jim Kelly is here? Okay. He would have the answer to that question. He is the one who looked into these fees and put forth this article. So I think we'd need that answer from him.
Hang on. Larry Blacker, can you hear me? Jim Kelly, the building inspector, is in the cafeteria. Can you put him to a mic? We have a question. Ah, Jim Kelly is here. Jim, can you? There's a floor mic right down the end of the aisle there, or you can come up to the podium if you wish. Did you hear the question, Jim?
I just ran up here from the cafeteria. I think I did. The fees were last changed in 1982. Excuse my breath. There is a substantial increase, but the state had done some research and provided us the information on the average fees for providing the service. So we took these from the state's recommendations, and they don't cover the entire cost of the service. But as you said, being a substantial increase, we feel as though it comes very, very close. I don't know if that answered the question, because halfway between the cafeteria and here, I might have missed something. Did that answer that question?
Hang on. Mr. Coe, was that your question? Are you satisfied with the answer? Okay. So we have 19 is still on the consent calendar. 20. 21. 22. 23. 24. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, can I ask, is that for a question or a debate? Can you bring a mic to Mr. Coe, please?
Mr. Moderator, the explanation of the article printed in the warrant is a little bit confusing, in that it appears that this matter was passed in the previous town meeting last year. Can we have an explanation for this, or would it be accurate to say that this was not passed by the 2004 session of the legislature because the town of Sudbury didn't get it there in time?
Town council for an answer.
The matter was not passed by the 2004 legislature, and the town did not get it there in time to have it passed, not because they were delayed in doing so, but we were trying to have this be looked at by the Department of Revenue as a revolving fund under the statute rather than requiring specific statutory language. We're still trying to talk them into that, but if they will not agree, then we will have to go to the legislature, because if the Department of Revenue doesn't agree with us, they will not allow the item to be used on the tax recap sheet, and they're in charge of that.
Mr. Coe, are you satisfied with the answer? Thank you. 33 will remain on the consent calendar. And the last item on the consent calendar is Article 41. For a question or debate, 41 is stricken from the consent calendar. Is there a motion to take Articles 3, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, and 33 out of order and consider them together at this time? I hear that motion. Is there a second? All those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's unanimous here in the auditorium. Let me check. And it's unanimous in the cafeteria. There'll be a second motion related to the consent calendar. Is there a motion in the words of the consent calendar motions as printed in the warrant for Articles 3, 18, 19, and 20 on pages 5, 16, 17, and 18, and Articles 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, and 33 on pages Roman numeral 3, 4, and 5 in the warrant? Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Is there a second? All those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's unanimous in here. And it's unanimous in the cafeteria. We're now on Article 2. Is Ralph Tyler in the hall for a motion?
Mr. Moderator, I move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Tyler for presentation.
I'd like to ask the hall for leave to spend about 30 minutes before I ask you to vote on that. This is a very important issue. Many of you have gone out of your way to come to town meeting when you ordinarily wouldn't do it. This is a very complex issue. I was concerned that just like last year when the Peacher Committee had 10 minutes to present this, I don't think that they did the work of that committee justice, and I don't think that 10 minutes tonight would do the importance of this topic justice. I intend to cover some strategic issues as well as discussing where this residential exemption fits into the strategic mix of Sudbury, and that's not something that I think can be given justice in 10 minutes. However, it's at your call. Thank you.
Okay. Our bylaw says that a presentation shall be 10 minutes. The hall has the authority to waive that and to give the presenter more time if they desire. It's a majority vote. So I will now ask for a show of cards from your seats. All those who wish to extend the presentation from 10 to 30 minutes, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's pretty overwhelming in here. Let me check the cafeteria. It was also overwhelmingly negative in the cafeteria.
That's
Mr. Tyler, you have 10 minutes.
We'll do 10 minutes. This is going to be a quick trip. I ask those of you who don't understand the slides in this quick trip to ask the questions later on, and we'll have an opportunity then to address them more fully. Sudbury really is facing a lot of, where do you do this? It has a number of strategic options in front of it. In terms of how do we keep these overrides from being a reoccurring theme year after year after year, property taxes, with exception in the last 2 years, recently have been increasing at 10% a year. And so while the Council on Aging makes some projections that over 15 years, a senior resident might have a certain tax bill They're basing that on an assumption that taxes are going to grow about 3% a year from my calculations, not the 10% that we've experienced. So what are our strategic options? Well, one of which is, and it was advocates for that in the Sudbury Town Crier the other day, let's increase business development. Frankly, that was the most uninformed piece of journalism I've read in a long time. They don't understand Sudbury does not have freeway access. We have limited capacity in our roads. Until such time as we get a freeway coming up through the middle between Highway Route 2 and Route 9, we're not going to do anything significant. I've done some calculations. I'd love to go through them, but I'm not going to have the time. But we've done this for the selectmen. And the bottom line of it is that there's maybe about $350,000 more in tax revenue, $700,000 at the outside for more commercial development. Simply stated, more commercial development is not the answer to rising taxes. How about increasing the property tax rate differential? That turns out to be a viable option. We're now collecting about $1.4 million more from commercial property than would be the case if they had a flat tax rate. Through home rule petition, Boston and other communities have a higher ability to go higher than that. We could probably jack that up if we chose as a policy matter, say another 50% or even 100%, get another $700,000. So that's a partial solution. It's a small solution, but it's something that might work. How about reducing costs of the services? Well, we've had dedicated finance committees year after year after year. They've diligently looked at these budgets, and frankly, they haven't been able to do anything about it. And as a result, after all those diligent reviews, we've had these tremendous increases. So what do they say? More of the same, it's likely to be just more of the same, unless something is done differently. And we have some significant strategic problems in solving the budget problem. We look at, for example, measures of labor input as our productivity measure. Well, obviously, then, if you're putting in labor and labor wants to be paid more and more money year by year, we're not going to fundamentally solve anything when we look at labor inputs as measures of productivity. That could be class size in the schools. That could be number of patrols out on the streets where we don't use technology to supplement them, et cetera. So those kind of things, in other words, there's not much potential to do this. Sudbury parents rightly expect and demand excellent schools for their kids. Nobody blames them for that. And further, the tax incentives from the federal tax program make it in everybody's interest, basically, to fold all the school costs into the school budget rather than charging parents for those extra things. Like Mr. Holliker, for example, had a nice article saying a lot of the sports and whatnot should be extra costs. Well, then parents have to pay that. It's not tax deductible. So naturally, they all want to put it into the tax rate. So none of that stuff's going to happen. So then we get down to, well, we could build more senior housing. That's another kind of option. And what happens with senior housing is that we get new people coming into Sudbury, people like Paul Pecos, for example, who's very active in the Peter Committee, who's a new resident, moved into Springhouse Pond. There are a lot of people from out of the city that moved into Springhouse Pond. There are also a lot of people in Sudbury. And everybody from Sudbury that left their home to go to Springhouse Pond, guess what? They created an empty home for a young family to move in who consume educational services. So as a practical matter, sort of the current trend of, well, let's just build a lot of senior housing is a mixed blessing. So you get for every student that goes into the home that's vacated by a senior, it's about $10,000 more in education costs. And we can detail where all that comes from. This is kind of the numbers without an override in this budget. There is with the override, it's a little over $10,000. So, again, seniors, you know, they're really the kind of people who create a surplus in the town, but if you create housing just for seniors, again, you create the incentives for people who already live in town to move into that housing, and you've defeated yourself. So that gets us to, and this was sort of the, you know, the methodology I used just to demonstrate the same methodology used by the member of the Finance Committee a couple of years ago that was speaking against Article 54. So I wasn't inventing anything. I was just sort of following his footsteps. So where are we? So now here's what we're talking about today. Well, what do we want to do? We want to encourage senior citizens in Sudbury to stay in their homes. Well, the other thing that we might be able to do to do that is, one is provide property tax incentives. That's what Article 2 is about. The other thing is maybe significantly increase the services delivered to seniors to match the tax contributions they're making. And there's a whole variety of things that could be thought about. We could pay their supplemental Medicare premiums, for example, as a town, if we decided to, because seniors, believe it or not, create about $7 million in property tax revenues from their homes. And what do we spend, $130,000 or something like that, I forget the exact number, on the Council on Aging. And then, of course, they consume the normal town services, too, which represent about 25% of the budget. So all in all, seniors probably use about $2.5 million of town services, and yet they're contributing $9 million in terms of tax revenue, so there's a net surplus there, plus an even bigger contribution is that contribution that they're occupying homes so that we don't have even further increases in the growth in students. So I look at the senior residential exemption as a strategic solution to the problem of ever ongoing overrides for the town of Sudbury. Let's look at some of the history of the migration. In the PTURC, when we were doing that work and part of the report in one of the supplements, you'll see the migration studies that were done for many, many months, and many of the members of PTURC dismissed these analyses as being all flaky and everything until they hired a demographer came in to advise the committee and basically validated this approach. So that the only qualification of this is we haven't actually factored in the death rate, but we're only, you know, that would be basically on the last bar up there. Anyway, from 2001 to 2002, this was the flows of people by age group into the town. If you look at it, basically, starting at about age 45, we have a net loss of people. And that's not, you know, think about it. It's not too surprising. Why would you move to Sudbury? It's got excellent schools. We advertise excellent schools. So when you're about, you know, you've become successful in your career, or maybe a couple of teachers together, they've got about 10 years experience, and I guess from, you know, they're each making about $60,000, $70,000 if they're teaching here in Sudbury, pool their income, come in here and move to Sudbury, buy a house when they're in their sort of 35 to 40-year range or, you know, whatever the field. So they come into Sudbury, educate their family, and then a lot of them decide, well, wait a second, this value equation changed. Here I'm paying $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a year in taxes. I no longer am using those educational services. And so in this normal transition, people moving in and out of town all the time, we're a very transient population, the people are leaving and they're not being replaced by new people in that age group, so you have a net outflow. So the question as a town, strategic question, how do we address this problem? Until we get a handle on this problem, we'll never solve the problem of high, high property taxes. 2003 to 2005, I did another study. It involved taking about 26,000 census records, matching the 2003 records to the 2005 records. That's by age, by year, and you aggregate them up, and you get this is the flow of the last couple of years. And I want to remind you, this flow happened when we had property tax deferrals at low interest rates available to all seniors, 60 and under. So obviously, no matter what people think, seniors don't buy the idea of putting a couple $100,000 or maybe $300,000 of tax liability onto their property to stay in Sudbury. Is that my 10?
Yeah, it's a 10 minute.
Okay. Vote for Article 2.
Thank you. We'll now hear from Selectman O'Brien for the Board of Selectmen's report.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Larry O'Brien for the Board of Selectmen. The Board of Selectmen unanimously opposes Article 2. This article, just as Article 54 at the 2003 town meeting, has no form of means testing. We okay there? You know, last year you asked me to be quick, too, you know. Article 54 has no form of means testing. Article 54 had no form of means testing, and without a form of means testing, the Board of Selectmen will not support any initiative brought forward. The Board of Selectmen supports the concept of helping those that need help, but we will not support a blanket tax reduction for homeowners where the ability to qualify is having reached age 60 and nothing more. Based on the written response to the Board of Selectmen's inquiry to the Department of Revenue, they responded as follows. And I ask you, if you would like to follow along, to turn to page 54 in your warrant. Page 54 in paragraph 2 says that the legislature can provide for differential taxation for different classes of taxpayers, but the Constitution specifically requires that the classes be based on property usage, not age or other factor. This proposal does not base itself on property usage. In paragraph 3, if you continue, Mr. Daniel J. Murphy, the chief of the Property Tax Bureau, addresses the subject of exemptions, which is the basis of Mr. Tyler's proposal, and he says, I quote, the legislature can provide for exemptions from taxation under Massachusetts Constitution Part 1, Chapter 1, Section 1, Article 4. If the proposal meets constitutional muster by being considered an exemption, it would have to meet a reasonableness standard. In that regard, we note that the legislature has in recent years expanded the property tax assistance available to seniors, but has not chosen to provide blanket assistance based on age alone. As the Board of Selectmen has pondered this proposal and worked on it, we have spoken with our senators and representatives. On March 16th, Senator Pam Reeser met at Town Hall with the Board of Selectmen at an open meeting of the Board of Selectmen and indicated that tax relief for seniors is a priority of the Senate this session. She reported that various ideas are being considered that would provide relief to qualifying seniors statewide. For those of you that read the Metro West News, there was an article in today's edition indicating that various proposals are beginning to be filed with what is now called the Revenue Committee. The Board of Selectmen agrees with Senator Reeser that the solution needs to be a statewide solution and not one that is generated town by town. 2 weeks ago in this very room, at that microphone, on that side over there, Representative Pope stated at the budget forum that, in her opinion, no form of senior tax relief would come out of the legislature without some form of means testing. And just last week in the Boston Globe, the governor announced his suggested senior tax relief proposal that comes in the form of expanding the deferral program. Sudbury took the lead on this subject 3 years ago and offers a program that is already better than what the governor has proposed. The Board of Selectmen also feels that this article, if ever enacted into law, would have a chilling effect on the resale value of all real estate in Sudbury. Any senior trying to sell their single-family home would be unlikely to find many, if any, potential buyers due to the additional property tax burden that the new homeowner would be expected to pay if they were below the age of 60. Potential buyers would consider other comparable towns, Wellesley, Wayland, Concord, Sherbourne, Weston, Lincoln, before they decided to pay the additional taxes that would be unique to Sudbury. When a senior tax relief program passes the legislature and is signed into law, the Board of Selectmen will examine it, present it to the town for consideration. Until then, we will continue to communicate with our elected representatives and senators and work with them to craft a solution that will be suitable for Sudbury seniors as well as all seniors across the Commonwealth. The Board of Selectmen urges you to vote no on Article 2.
Mr. Jacobson for the Finance Committee.
Members of the Finance Committee believe that in order for it to consider supporting a special home rule exemption to aid with the taxpayer's economic needs, requirements must include a means test, an asset test, and some minimum residency length. Since these are not the conditions that exist in the article being proposed, the Finance Committee does not recommend its approval.
Thank you. We'll now open up the hall for either for or against the article. I recognize the gentleman over there. Yes.
Gene Berkowitz, 52 Lincoln Lane. I have a motion to amend the article.
The proper way to do it is just I move to amend Article 2 by doing whatever you'd like it to do.
I move to amend Article 2 by changing the wording in Section 1. Where it says 30% of the average assessed value to 30% of the median assessed value.
Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Yes. The point of order is that Mr. Tyler thinks that the amendment is outside the four corners of the article. If you wait a moment, we'll determine that. Yes, Mr. Berkowitz. I'm afraid your amendment is out of order. If you look in the first line of Article 2, it says to see if the town will vote to petition the General Court of the Commonwealth to enact special legislation specifically set forth below. So I'm afraid the amendment is out of order. Does anyone else wish to speak in favor or against? Yes.
I'm Thomas Young, better known as Tucker Young. Live on Stock Farm Road.
Excuse me for interrupting. Your name and address for the record, please.
Okay. Thomas Young, Stock Farm Road, better known as Tucker. I'll be 80 years old in a month, and I've been paying taxes in Sudbury for 34 years and 59 years throughout my lifetime. I want some relief. I'm a senior citizen, and like a senior citizen, we're so cold to be on fixed incomes. That's not true. Our incomes are going down because the cost of living has gone up faster than Social Security and our pensions and our savings. So we need some help. School taxes are 69% of our budget, and that's a heck of a big portion. If we get this reduction of about 30%, that will put us down in the situation where the seniors would pay for the rest of the budget, fire, police, highways, administration costs, and so forth, and still have money left over to pay for the schools. As was brought out earlier, if we move out of town, which we can do, is somebody moves into our house with two or three more kids, it's another penalty for Sudbury. So I feel that although I'm in favor of education, I put myself through 8 years in school, graduate school even, and my kids both finished college. So I like education. My kids got a great education here in Lincoln, Sudbury. But I think that we need some relief from these taxes, which my taxes have gone up 60% in the last 10 years. That's 6.9% compounded. And what happened to Proposition 2.5? Not Proposition 2.5, but the 2.5% increase. So we're paying 6.9% more year by year in assessment reassessments and tax increases. So I think we need relief, and it's not a gift because we'll still be paying for the services we achieve, but I think at some point in time, the seniors should be relieved of the burden of the schools and let the people who get the direct benefits of education from our schools pay the cost. Pay as you go is my theory.
Thank you. Larry Blacker, anybody in the cafeteria wish to speak? Okay. Yes, Mr. Pecos. Runner, could you pass that mic down? Mr. Pecos, why don't you check and see if it's on before you speak? There's a little button that says on-off right on the side.
It's on in here. Let's give it a try. Okay. Paul Pekas, 231 Knobscot Road. Everybody's in favor of the concept of senior tax relief. We've been at this for several years. Nobody's really doing anything about it. We try. Nothing goes forward. The state says they're trying. Nothing really happens. Somebody should start doing something about this. Every single proposal or article has its flaws. Last year, I was a member of the tax committee. We had a means test on income. Said, no, not good enough. We need something on assets. There are some problems with assets. Somebody who's on a pension has income. Somebody who is on 401k has assets. They may be drawing the same amount of money every month, but they're considered to be different. Somebody has to take the step to go forward. Maybe the answer is we must keep the pressure on the legislature. Flawed as it may be, we must keep the pressure on. Something has to be done. Not everybody needs relief. Not every senior needs relief. But nothing is going to be perfect. There are some seniors in this town who are really hurting. I'd like to hear from Ralph about how the residential exemption could work and what the burden shift would be.
Mr. Tyler, please.
Thank you. Could I have slide... start with slide 38. First of all, burden shifting, just it's not a new idea. Burden shifting without means testing is not a new idea. We have a $1.4 million commercial burden shift that works basically by lowering the tax rate for residential, by upping it for the business owners. And that burden shift, by the way, the characteristic of it is that the wealthiest people in Sudbury get the biggest benefit from that burden shift. Now, how is that, without a means test, that we can have a burden shift and give it to the wealthiest people in town? I mean, we should be consistent. So if we're not going to shift the burdens, except with a means test, now we should just eliminate this or take that $1.4 million and use it to reduce taxes for low-income people in Sudbury. The current way it's being done now just doesn't make any sense. But there is a precedent for without means testing. Now, the second point is that we accept, nobody even mentions it, probably most people don't know it, there's a $3.4 million burden shift from Lincoln to Sudbury just by the way the school district was set up. If you look at the property tax, taxable property in both towns, Lincoln pays $1.29 for the high school on their tax rate, and we pay $3.99. If you did a consolidated school district type tax like they have in many states, in many parts of this state, I believe, as well, that tax rate for Lincoln would go up $1.78. It would come down for Sudbury. There would be a shift of Lincoln to pay $3.4 million. Now, that's a burden shift that happens based on the number of kids in school. So it's sort of a parallel, like seniors don't have any kids in school, so maybe they should get a tax break. So we do that, too, without means testing. So just another example. So let's get to this situation, though, because that's what you want to hear, if I can get this. We'll talk about that thing later on. The residential exemption is done in other towns, 30%. It applies to everybody that owns homes without a means test, Somerville, Cambridge, and Boston. It's a home rule petition. It's been done before. So here's the burden shift and here's how this proposal would work. Basically, you calculate the 30% residential exemption. The average of residential property, and I think this was last year, was $563,007. 30% of that is $168,900. And that comes off basically the assessment of the seniors who apply. And by the way, this is not a mandatory program. It's a voluntary program. Only those who apply participate. Depending on how many participate depends on the amount of the burden shift. So, for example, if only one senior applied, they would get basically a $2,274 reduction in their taxes as a result of applying for this. and that would be shifted to everybody else in town. If there were, say, 500, it'd be about 1,000,001. Interestingly, there's about 1,300 homes in Sudbury that have a senior living in them. Presumably, they may have some ownership. So if every home in Sudbury applied, the burden shift from this proposal would be about the same as the tax increase that's being proposed by the override. Now, Mr. O'Brien certainly isn't going to stand up and tell you that if we pass the override, not one single person in Sudbury will be able to sell their home because we pass the override, will we? So you know that that is just a phony argument that he made. So the burden shift here is a comparable to this override. Now is the time to do it. It's kind of a sense of good faith to the seniors that we want to do something about your extreme burden on taxes at a time when we, the younger generation, are asking for further excellence in our schools, further burdening the seniors. There'll never be a right time to do it. As Mr. Pecos says, every proposal that's come before this town meeting has, you know, there'll be critics. We could stand here and why don't we, you know, kind of pretend we're doing that advertisement you see now about, you know, like, where is the selectman's proposal this year for property tax relief for senior? So why don't you spend about 10 seconds trying to think of what the selectman have proposed this year?
Point of order, Mr. Moderator.
10 seconds.
Yes.
Hang on.
I believe the speaker has answered the question as now.
No, we're still going.
That's okay.
Now progressed into an argument.
Okay. We got 10 seconds left, Mr. Tyler.
Okay, yeah, great. The shift in burden by home value, if somebody wants to know that, we can spread that out for you.
Mr. Tyler?
Yeah. This is how it works.
Mr. Tyler?
Yes.
You have 5 full minutes. Please stop. We're now going to, Larry Blacker, can you hear me in the cafeteria? Why don't you take a couple questions in there? Kevin, back there, can we hear them and can they hear us?
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Larry.
I'm Richard Lane from 23 Sunset Path here in Sudbury. I've lived here 11 years. I didn't grow up here, but I grew up in another community where this issue of older versus younger is becoming a major conflict in this community. It is not everywhere, but one of the issues of this proposal, that as I hear it, is we don't want more kids. Let's try to keep the kids down. But I was talking to my mom about this issue, and she had an interesting highlight. Her home went up in value just like the homes here have gone up in value. When she was my age and she had me in school, she couldn't sit there and whine that my grandparents didn't sit there and whine, oh, we're not getting our relief. They paid their dues the same way as we would expect. I would expect them when I turned 60 to pay my dues. If you look at our society, everybody contributes differently at different stages of their life. My generation is right now funding the Social Security for most of the seniors in this room. They're not getting the money back. We know that. You know, this is how the human society has evolved here in America, and I think we've done a tremendous disjustice and taught our children a very bad rule of...
Share with you some of my thoughts and some of what I learned from that. The first thing I thought was interesting was in many states, we don't have the problem we have here. There are lots of states where when you're 65 years old, your school taxes are frozen. Wouldn't that be interesting? There's several people have put bills in the legislature to do that in Massachusetts. There are other places where there are very different kinds of senior citizen tax reliefs, similar to what seniors get in the movies and early bird specials. The life in our country has been organized in many ways to recognize the fact that once you stop working, you can't look forward to making more money the next year. Things are fixed. You've heard about seniors on fixed incomes. It's a very real thing. I've been retired now for about 5 years, and every year I realize things are more expensive. It's happening, and there's no relief for a senior from that. Unfortunately, I think that Mr. Tyler's bill is unconstitutional. That's my opinion. I base it on what I learned last year about Governor Winthrop and Samuel Adams. Governor Winthrop took advice from the king, and he said that every town in Massachusetts shall support common schools. Samuel Adams wrote to Abigail Adams and said, that's a wonderful idea, and he put it in our Constitution. So having a public school in Sudbury is a responsibility of the town, not of parents. It's our obligation to support the schools. And we should all support them, even those of us whose children have graduated. I'm particularly fond of Lincoln Sudbury Regional because I was the superintendent principal here for 8 years in the 1970s. Many of you may have been students then. I don't think I recognize too many as parents. And I think most of us who are senior citizens support our schools. You're going to ask all of us to vote to override the 2.5 limit later in this town meeting. You think that's reasonable, and I think most of you are here to support that. I admire all of you who worked to get out the vote for that. I worked with Joe Meeks earlier on the Property Tax Equity Committee. If you recall, Joe spoke in favor of senior citizen tax relief last week. What will happen if we pass this motion? Very likely, it will not become law, and nothing will happen to affect your taxes. If the skies open up and it becomes law, you would be voting to give every senior citizen in town a $2,000 approximately reduction in taxes. Mr. Tyler will tell you what will happen if 80% accept it, 85%. I would predict between 99 and 100% of seniors will accept. There's one couple I'm not sure about. But you should assume that this would be a way of giving every senior family a $2,000 approximate reduction in their taxes. Now, what would that cost each of you? I don't know. And, Mr. Moderator, if you would allow, I'd like to ask Ralph to tell us in 30 seconds how much this would cost an average family.
Yeah. Mr. Levington, your question is, what is it going to cost the rest of the citizens to give this?
I don't think Ralph can do anything in 30 seconds, but...
Five. Ralph, would you just answer that question, please?
547. David, we're waiting for a slide to come up here.
Ms. Tyler, if you can just give us the answer of the question without assuming we can't do that.
For the average house in Sudbury, $600,000+, if 1,000 seniors apply, it would be $425.
Okay.
That's what I thought, the average.
The answer was $425,000.
No.
$425. Sorry. Mr. Tyler?
That was for the average residential property, which was a single family residential property, about $601,000. Average value, the $425 to answer it.
Thank you.
If they could switch the screen, however.
No, we're all set, Mr. Tyler. Mr. Levington, your 5 minutes are up. We're going to have two speakers from this hall, and then we'll go back to the cafeteria. Yes, ma'am.
I am a senior. My name is Carolyn Hanauer. I live at 48 Old Lancaster Road. I am very lucky. I managed to avoid the dot-com bust. I retired in I came to Sudbury in 1979, and I am able to tweak both the value of my property and the amount of money I receive. I am not in favor of any proposal which does not prevent people like me from benefiting from a senior tax relief. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard in the auditorium? Now, hang on a second. Does anybody wish to speak in the cafeteria, Larry? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Julia Fitzgerald. I live at 14 Lettery Circle, and yes, I'm the parent of two of those penalties that people seem to want to keep out of town. I think there's a broader issue of tax relief here, not just for people 60 and over. There are people certainly under the age of 60 who are working very hard in order to make their tax payments, their mortgage payments, to put food on the table and do the best they can to make the best life for their children. I grew up in the city of Newton, and that's where just now my dad still lives. But I received the benefit of my grandparents and their friends paying taxes so that my sister and I could have an absolutely wonderful quality education. Educating our children is a job of society. It's not just the job of the parents. If that was the case, we would only have private schools. We would not have public schools. If we're going to address tax relief, it's tax relief for everyone and looking at restructuring for it. And in our society, no one gets a break for anything without proving that we need it. Whether we go to college, you can't get a loan for your house without proving that you can pay it back. So I think what we need to look at is if we're going to pass something in Sudbury, it's something that needs to be able to pass constitutional muster, that addresses property tax relief for everyone, and it's something that our legislators can support.
Hang on a moment. We're going to have a little bit more debate. We have a couple people in the cafeteria who wish to speak. Go ahead, Larry. Can you hear me? Okay, my name is Rich White, 14 Maple Avenue, Sudbury. I find myself in an interesting position. I am 53 and retired on a fixed income, which means that according to AARP, I'm a senior, but according to the article, I am not. So I am being asked to subsidize people who are 7 years older than I or older who are making more money than I am. And I feel this is not just. And there, madam, I am medically retired. I cannot go back to work. Thank you. So I stand in opposition to the article as presently stands. Thank you.
Someone else here? Anyone? Please, sir. James Frazier Moore Road. I can see that this is probably unconstitutional and could never make it through the legislature. I think that voting for this act sends an important message to the town that we are on an unsustainable course with our current policies. We simply cannot go on forever raising the tax rate. At some point, it's going to destroy the values of our house because it's the monthly payment that matters, not the tax rate or the price of the mortgage individually, it's their sum. And I think we really just have to send a message to the town that it's time to come up with some scheme for controlling our expenditures. We cannot go on. Thank you.
Yes, I'll entertain a call to the question at this time. Is there a second on that? All those in favor, please raise your cards. All those opposed, please raise your card. Thank you for your patience. We're just taking the same count in the cafeteria. The vote was likewise in the cafeteria, so the question has been called. It's Article 2. Can we put that? It's been moved in the words of the article. You all have it in front of you in your warrant. I'll ask all those who are in favor of Article 2, please raise your cards. All those opposed. Okay, thank you. Okay, please, I'm going to ask you again. If you're in favor of Article 2, please stand and hold your cards. Could you raise your hand real high? Anybody who sees him and sitting in his row or in front, please sit down. I've counted you already. Please sit down. And everyone else, stay up. Mr. Pecos, your row can sit down. Sit down, please. I'm going to count the rest, please. Thank you all. Could you please sit down? Everybody opposed, please rise and hold your cards. Gentleman right there. Anybody in his row or in front, please sit down. Thank you. You may be seated. Can I have your attention, please? The vote in this hall was relatively close, for and against. The count in the cafeteria was at least 2-1 negative. So this article does not prevail, it fails. You need 60. What is your point of order? Only if you tell me now what your point of order is. I understand. There's been two people who've asked for a count. Are there five others who wish the hall counted? There are. We're going to count the halls. Would the tellers come forward, please? Excuse me a moment. We have so many people here. I need four more tellers to help with the count. Could four volunteers please come forward? Four. Barbara, thank you. Thank you. Come on up. That's fine. Three. One more. Yes. Thank you very much. You come forward to see Barbara Sarah, the town clerk. We have six tellers here. Could you move down towards the pole, please? No, just one of you to the pole, the other one there. Move down towards this pole. That's fine. Joe, could you move down towards that pole? Joe, move down that way. That's great. Thank you. Okay, are you paired with her? Great. Flash each other the number, so you both write it down. You have rows 1 through 3. 4 through 7. Joe, you 4 through 7? 4 through 6. 4 to 6? Got it. 7 to 9? 7 to 9? Okay. Where are the two tellers counting the back of the hall? Okay. Great. You may be better off right over there in the back, and you can go likewise right over there in the back. You might get a better view of the count, okay? Could you go there now? Thank you. Where are the two tellers who are counting the back of the hall? Mr. Coe, are you one? Who's counting the back of the hall? Great. One of you is there, and one of you is there. Go around there, please. And flash each other the number when you count. You have rows 10 through 16? Great. Could you go back there? Okay, folks in the auditorium, please, I need your cooperation. This is going to be a difficult task. So now we're going to take people in rows 10 through 16. See where Mr. Coe is standing? He's row 10. That's row 10. If you're in, and where this gentleman here is standing, that's row 10. 10 to 16, stand up if you're in favor of the proposal. And listen to the two tellers. They'll ask you to sit when they finish counting. While we're doing that, I'm going to ask the first three rows here to stand if you're in favor. Please stand up if you're in favor. Rows 1 through 3. Can you count those now, please? One row at a time. Anybody on the dais is in favor, please stand. Thank you. Thank you. In the balcony. In the balcony, please. Anybody in favor of Article 2, please stand. Balcony. Anybody in favor of Article 2, please stand and raise your card. Row 10 can be seated, please. Those two folks who are leaving, you're going to have to just wait a little while. You can't leave the hall during a vote. Which rows have you counted? What? You finished? You both agree? Rows 1 through 3, be seated, please. Row 4 through 6, the next three rows, if you're in favor of Article 2, please stand. Raise your card. Rows 4, 5, and 6, please stand if you're in favor of the proposal. Rows 1 through 3, can you both come down here, please? The teller, can you come down, please? Are you done? Are you all set? You both agree on the count? Can you come down here? Can you please sit down? We're just talking about rows 4 through 6. Sit down. And if you're in favor of the proposal, can rows 4 through 6 please be seated? Thank you. Now we're going to count rows 7 through 9. If you're in favor of Article 2, please rise and hold your cards. Joe Bowes, can you and your partner come down here and give me the count? These rows can sit down now. Okay, your attention please. Can I have your attention please? Could row 10, all those in favor of Article 2, just row 10, please stand. Raise your cards. It's right where Mr. Coe is on your right and where that gentleman is on your left. Row 10. Larry, can you hear me in the cafeteria? Why don't you go ahead and take all... Thank you. Row 10 can sit down. Thank you. Okay. In the balcony, all, can I have your attention, please? Okay, we're going to count the no votes on Article 2. Could all those in the balcony who are opposed to Article 2 please raise your cards and stand? Thank you. Could rows 1, 2, and 3 who are opposed to Article 2 please stand and raise your cards? All those on the dais who are opposed, please stand and raise your cards. Rows 10 through 16 who are opposed, please stand and raise your cards. Okay, rows 1 through 3, please sit down. Row 1 through 3, sit down. And can we have rows 4, 5, and 6 who are opposed, please rise and hold your cards. Rows 4, 5, and 6, please stand and hold your cards if you're opposed. Thank you. Okay. Every row nine. Can I have your attention, please? Can I have your attention, please? Folks, can the runner tell folks where row nine is, please? Stand in front of the row. If you know where you are, people in row nine who are opposed, please rise and hold your cards. Row nine. Thank you. Rows 15 and 16. Rows 15 and 16 opposed. Please rise again and hold your card. We would like to recount those two rows. Rows 15 and 16. That's row nine. Is that row nine? Row nine can sit down. We're done with these. Wait a second. Rows four through six can sit down. And can I please have rows seven and eight? Rows seven and eight who are opposed, please rise and hold your cards. Rows 7 and 8 can be seated. Thank you.
Can I have your attention, please? We have the results of Article 2 for those of you who might be interested. Ah, oh, that was quick. Voting in favor of Article 2 between the balcony, the floor of the auditorium, and the cafeteria, 426. Voting against Article 2 in those same locations, 891. It failed. Article 3 is on the consent calendar, which passed. We're now on Article 4, pay as you throw. I recognize Peter Glass for a motion. Okay. Mr. Glass is going to make a motion. Can we have your attention, please? Thank you. Mr. Glass.
I move to appropriate the sum of $750,000 to contract for the collection of trash from each Sudbury household in specially marked pay-as-you-throw bags and to contract for the collection of recyclables from each Sudbury household where Sudbury trash and recyclables are placed at the curb and for administrative costs of the town, including the transfer station, set appropriation to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 override in accordance with General Laws Chapter 59, S21C, and to appropriate the sum of $500,000 for the Solid Waste Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 2006 for the purpose of contracting for the disposal of solid waste collected and the disposal of recyclables to be offset by receipts received by the enterprise derived from the income received from sale of pay-as-you-throw bags or otherwise, said appropriation to be in addition to the sum to be attributable to the cost incurred hereunder after the funding under Article 8 is met and offset by the income to the enterprise. In the event that the $750,000 appropriation does not obtain the approval of a Proposition 2.5 override, as set forth herein, the appropriation of $500,000 shall not be effective.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Glass, can you tell us the differences between the proposal as we see it on the view graph and what we read in the warrant?
In Part 1, Sections A and B, the word one has been eliminated. Can't specify the number of haulers that it would take to cover the town. They might perhaps put one hauler in one part of town and one in another, something of that nature. In Part 2, the solid waste disposal part, we have to specify a number of what we might consider would be how much money would be raised by the sale of bags. It was required that there was a number for that. And finally, although money is being raised to keep the transfer station open, we can't, in the article, require the town manager to spend it there. And that was on Section 3. Is that right? No, Section C on Part 1. That's the basic difference.
You may continue.
Okay. All right. My name is Peter Glass. I'm speaking to you very quickly on behalf of the Sudbury Earth Decade Committee, which is why I'm going to ask for 3 extra minutes, if I may, so I can speak a little more reasonably paced.
Excuse me. Why don't you take your presentation, speak fast, and we'll see if you don't finish in 10 minutes.
Among other projects, the Earth Decade Committee has run a quarterly plastics collection for the last 10 years, collecting 4 tons a year of recyclable plastic.
Now, Mr. Glass,
the transfer station.
Not quite that fast. A little slow. Come on.
We are proposing town-wide.
What is your point of order? No, I appreciate the point of order, but it is not. You can still vote to go beyond the override. We would have to have another town election. Continue, Mr. Glass.
We're proposing town-run, town-wide pay-as-you-throw, or PAYT, a system of trash collection and disposal that would substantially improve Sudbury's recycling rate while lowering the cost of trash collection for many of our citizens. We think it makes sense for the health of our community, the health of the planet, and the health of our pocketbooks. Naturally, for the EDC, the significant environmental benefits of this proposal are paramount, and we hope that is true for you. Even so, most people should stay even financially when the town negotiates a contract with a hauler for us. PAYT has existed at the transfer station for more than 10 years. Article 4 extends the program to the entire town. We cannot fund it by taking money from other budget items. So our proposal requires a one-time override of $750,000. Hiring a hauler, according to figures obtained from haulers and towns, will cost around $675,000. This hauler will pick up our trash and recyclables at the curb and at the transfer station. In addition, according to the DPW department, keeping the transfer station open requires $50,000. Each household would pay an average of $121 more on their taxes. However, residents will no longer have to pay an average $450 for private pickup. Transfer station users will no longer pay $100 for a sticker. That the $121 is tax deductible should keep the actual cost of the override close to $100 per household. All households could use curb or transfer station. The town will be able to provide each of us a necessary service at a reasonable price. Each household would switch to buying PAYT trash bags, which are available at Sudbury Farms, Shaw's, and elsewhere in town. Money collected from the sale of PAYT bags primarily pays the cost of incinerating the trash. The actual cost of incinerating a 30-gallon bag of trash at the Andover incinerator is approximately $1.50. That's why the bag costs $1.50 at the store. 15-gallon bags cost 75 cents. Under PAYT, people can use fewer bags and reduce their cost by recycling more. Currently, this household pays as much as this one. Now, I know you are all most interested in how much PAYT programs help the environment, and I'll get to that in a moment. But first, to raise $750,000 for Article 4, each $100,000 of property assessment would cost $20.20. The average $600,000 home is 6 times $20.20, or $121.20. As with all local taxes paid, your particular assessment, whether it be $125 or $60 or $200, is tax deductible on your federal income tax. The DEP says under PAYT incentives, most households generate 2 bags of trash or fewer each week. We can compare curbside PAYT to the 2 current alternatives, where the administrative or hauler fee is $121 or $103 with tax deduction for PAYT. $100 for the transfer station, or $450 for everything with private subscription. So the average house, $600,000, with the average 2 bags, at $259 per year for curbside service, should be a savings for most. That's right there. I know if you look, you may find a deal for $264 a year for pickup every other week and no recyclables pickup, but an average house hauler fee being $103, plus only $78 for, say, 1 bag a week, is only $181 a year for full curbside service. No private hauler is matching that. Even if you continue to put out 4 bags after PAYT, you should be close to even. Most people will save or stay even under PAYT's pay-for-what-you-use system. Trying to achieve this increased recycling and cost savings by expanding the transfer station's enterprise fund for curbside would not work. It does not guarantee enough subscribers to get the lowest possible price from a hauling company. It doesn't guarantee any subscribers at all. That was the determination of the Pay-as-you-throw committee, which studied the enterprise fund option extensively at the request of the Board of Selectmen. When the contract with the hauler expires, typically in 3 years, we can review the program. It would be up to you whether to keep the program, pay for any increases, or drop it. A 10% increase in prices would require a new override of less than $75,000. Alternatively, or in addition, a 10-cent increase in the price of the paid trash bags, for instance, would raise $50,000. Now, let me be very clear about this, because town government is most worried about down the line. If, after some years, you want to keep having curbside paid via town service, and you most likely will, you must know that eventually the price for the contract will go up. The town will not want to take money from the schools or anything else to pay the hauler and the transfer station, nor should they. You will be asked to give more money through an override, as it seems we are every 3 years, to pay for town services. A separate override like this one would allow you to vote on just this service without worrying about whether you are voting for or against other things at the same time. On the other hand, wrapped in with some larger override, a trash contract increase will be a very small proportion. Other towns using just the trash program structure we are proposing handle down the line with equanimity. Haulers are not burning recyclables. That would cost them money, and when recycling them pays them cash. Under PAPE, the town would have oversight, even if choosing the specific recycling facility and the town gets the cash. Currently, a waiver for half the sticker fee, $50, is available at the transfer station for cases of demonstrated hardship for people of any age or situation. Over the years, by word of mouth, many believed it to be a senior discount or exemption. Regardless, a municipal service on the tax levy cannot be discounted for any particular class. That said, Article 4 is likely to save 750 senior households who put their trash out at the curb $100 to $200. As for those seniors who have been using the waiver, the increase will be small if they indeed have smaller assets. A home assessed at $300,000 will only pay $60, not counting tax deductibility, only a $10 increase. A $400,000 home is only $80. While we acknowledge that no one wants costs to increase for seniors in town, the debate and proposed solutions on this issue have risen far beyond the town and $50. We hope that the added convenience of being able to use curbside pickup will help offset any increase. The transfer station is important for the hundreds of households who intend to continue using it, as well as for collecting hazardous materials, the put and take, and other amenities. It might become a major transfer point for recyclables under Article 4. Although the money raised by this override to keep the station open could be reassigned by the town manager and used for other purposes, why deny so many possibilities and up so many people for so little money? By voting for this article, you are letting the town know you want the transfer station to stay open. Now, I know you are all eager to find out how much Article 4 will help the environment, but we'll save time later if I quickly answer some questions people have asked. What if our one hauler gives bad advice, bad service? There'd be a performance clause, doesn't want a bad reference, wants to renew contract. Bulky items like refrigerators and couches, you do as you do now. Garage and backdoor services now will be an extra charge paid to the hauler. Bags, we're used to them. We can get bigger sizes. We can review other options later. Barrels, the town doesn't require. It's a good idea to have them. You can buy toters for $45 or other barrels. No reason to suppose your neighbor will be any less responsible than you about keeping trash safe and contained. Ah, at last, the environmental portion of our presentation. According to Yale and Columbia's latest index of global environmental stewardship, out of 146 nations, the United States ranked only 45th for protecting the environment. One other sobering statistic, our 5% of the world's population emits 25% of all greenhouse gases. People generally want to help the environment. PAPE is a chance for all of us in Sudbury to cut down on the waste and pollution we generate. We can set an example for our children and leave a healthier planet for the generations that follow. Conserving resources directly impacts sustainability, global warming, and pollution. We can expect at least 20% increase in recycling from the 4,000 curbside households. 2 bags of trash per week from each household would generate 120,000 pounds of trash a week.
Mr. Glass?
Yeah.
How much longer would you guess that you have?
Two or three minutes that I asked.
Okay. Hang on. All those in the hall who would like to give Ms. Glass another 2 or 3 minutes, please signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Hang on a second. Mr. Glass.
What's that?
What's that? He'll hit me with that big hammer.
The vote was that you cannot continue to speak, except I'll grant you another 30 seconds because of the point of order.
Here at EDC's quarterly plastics collection are 40 volunteers and hundreds of households where you can see the plastic seven not taken to transportation or recycled. Here's 1 ton of plastic. How much is 12 tons? Remember the scene from Miracle on 34th Street, where they bring in bag after bag of mail and pile it on the judge's bench? Now imagine volunteers piling from here to the street, bringing in 1,600 bags and piling them on the stage. We hope that you will have see this as an opportunity to bring about a healthier, more sustainable town. Where we're at? There's the kids recycling.
We're actually finished, Mr. Glass. We're all set. Mr. Jacobson of the Finance Committee, you have a report, please.
The Finance Committee does not deem the amount of taxpayer savings, if any, from the proposed pay-as-you-throw program a compelling enough argument solely for the committee to recommend it become permanently incorporated into the tax levy. Approving an override to support pay-as-you-throw and including it in the levy will not ensure that these funds will remain to be used for this purpose in future years. As we face future difficult budgets, a decision might be made to eliminate the program and divert these funds for other uses as is presently being considered in Maynard. In regard to the environmental or health benefits argued by the article's petitioners, these are not within the purview of the Finance Committee and as such are left to the individual taxpayer to make a determination as to the importance or relevance in the decision-making process. The Finance Committee does not recommend approval of this article.
Chairman of the Board of Selectmen, John Dravinsky.
John Dravinsky, Chairman of the Board of Selectmen. Let me start off saying that we're all committed to protecting the environment. As a matter of fact, Sudbury has one of the highest recycling rates in Commonwealth, where our classification from the DEP is A+. So currently, with the system in place, we do have a very high recycling rate. This proposal. The proposal comes from the Earth Decade Committee, which is not a town committee or a board or commission. It's a great bunch of people who do a lot of wonderful things to the community, and they work very hard on plastic recycling. And if you've gone to the Peter Noyes School, you know they work very, very hard. But I think our concern with this is we're getting in the area of increasing the tax levy. And the tax levy, we think, should be for more important things like public safety, education, and debt exemption. So to raise the tax levy in this matter here, I think we're really treading on thin ice. I think the other thing I want to point out is that the transfer station right now, which is open, is under DEP purview, and we're working with DEP to make sure it stays open. But it's not clear it would. Back in 2003, the Board of Selectmen actually put together a pay-as-you-throw committee to look at this issue. And the committee came back to us with these recommendations that there are perceived benefits. Yes, we can recycle and costs may go down. They suggested two options. First option was to use the enterprise fund, which we're currently using at the transfer station, or a user fee or levy tax, which Mr. Glass is proposing. In response to this report, the town, through a generous donation for the
Sudbury Foundation, thank you, Derry, hired a consultant to look at this issue. And we hired a very prominent individual from Mass DEP whose expertise was with pay-as-you-throw. And his report to us, we asked the consultant to do another thing because we thought we got a lot of feedback from people in town to keep the transfer station open, so we asked them to take a look at an additional third option. And he looked at the three options, and he came back with option number three, a town-wide fee-based enterprise fund with a transfer station left open. And the consultant was ready to develop an RFP and go to town meeting. So what did the board decide to do? The board at that time decided not to take any action, and the reason being was the town was going to take over ownership of a large operation, which we weren't sure what the financial impacts were going to be. It wasn't a priority at the time for the Board of Selectmen. We had more important things to deal with, and we still do have more important things to deal with. And there was not a huge outcry from the general public. The general public seemed to be very happy with the system. The system is not broken, and there's a lot of positive feeling about the transfer station. And if this proposal gets approved, it's not clear the transfer station would stay open. Why do we have two different mechanisms of disposing of solid waste and recyclables? The problems with this proposal, while it's the thought process is right to do the right thing by the environment, it has impacts on the tax levy. As the vice chair of the FinCom said, each year we have a struggle over how are we going to allocate our funds. And we heard tonight from Mr. Tyler on tax relief for seniors that our taxes are high. This would be adding to that tax burden. But this will do also will force us to really pay for this service first, because this will be everyone in town is going to need it, but this will be the first thing that's going to be allocated in the levy. The use of the levy. We think it's a very bad idea to use the levy for this purpose. Primarily, it really jeopardizes our future balancing of the budget, and you can see additional surrounding towns like Maynard, Natick, Stoneham, and Wellesley have problems with the tax levy, and they're basically, if their overrides don't pass, pay-as-you-throw is going to come off their services, so people have to hire private haulers. Just a couple of things on the warrant of fixed. The cost won't be fixed. The warrant says the average cost to be $125. Some people pay more, some people pay less. Basically, you'll pay what's the value of your home. That's how the tax levy gets assessed, not a straight dollar amount. So as your property value increases, the greater amount you'll pay. It removes choice. Right now in town, you have choice. You can have haulers come and pick up your trash. Haulers can come to your backyard and pick up trash. Or you can take your recyclables and trash to the transfer station where it gets handled appropriately. Some people like their trash at the curbs. Some people like the totes. And as I said earlier, the system's not broken. Why do we really change it? And if you're not happy with the vendor, even though Mr. Glass said there would be a clause in the contract, it's not clear how that would be fixed and how we would fire a contractor. Just some information on transparency of cost. I think if we put pay-as-you-throw on the tax levy, it's going to be really hard to track where these costs are going, and it's ripe for perhaps increased costs where it's for the taxpayer. Specifically, Town of Concord looked at this, and they decided to use a fee-based curbside pickup with using haulers.
John, we have 5 minutes. Can you wrap up in about 15 seconds?
Right here.
Thank you.
Well, the board is interested in this. We'll continue to monitor the situation. We'll consider recommendations at the town meeting to consider the Concord model, which keeps the transfer station open and gives the residents the opportunity to either use a private hauler or bring things to the transfer station. And finally, I think in Mr. Glass's thing, we want you to recycle as much as you can to support the environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody wish to speak in the auditorium? Yes, sir. Yes.
Ivan Lubash, 25 Barber Road. I will support the selectmen and FinCom on their financial aspect of it.
And besides, when it comes to trying to forecast numbers, it's awfully crazy. And just some minor points which haven't been addressed. If residents use a trash container at additional cost, who's going to confirm that only the yellow trash bags are in the container? Nothing to stop a resident from using whatever he wants as far as going into the trash container. Next, if the container is not used to put trash bags on, and you just put the bags on the street, who's going to patrol the area to be certain the bags are not torn open by cats, dogs, birds, coyotes, raccoons, and other animals who do their own recycling? And how do you stop individuals from doing damage or pranks, whatever term you want? We can, as some towns found, have pretty messy streets, and Sudbury does not have its own sanitation department. And another one, what numbers do we have that the trash haulers recycle the recyclables, and it seems to be much more labor involved than what they're talking about. I think it might work if everybody were totally honest, respectful, and could control the animals in the street, but it just seems to be a total mess and a waste of time and money. Thank you.
We have someone in the cafeteria who wishes to speak. Larry, you want to take that speaker?
Yes. Hold on. Yes, we have someone.
Debbie Howell, 123 Victoria Road. I speak in favor of having a townwide curbside pickup. Without having a lot of statistics and details to debate and argue, seems pretty logical to me. The vast majority of people in town hire private haulers. Whether they hire them for $300, $400 a year, they hire private haulers. They put their garbage outside. With the curbside pickup, you have your garbage outside just like you did before. Same raccoons would come as they did before. But as a town, we can negotiate much better rates. We wouldn't have more than one hauler coming down your street different days. There'd be some accountability. If there was trash strewn on your street, the hauler that must have been responsible or partly responsible. You wouldn't have the noise from all the different trucks. You wouldn't have the pollution. It just seems to me logical that if we work as a group, we'd get better rates, we'd save money. I don't really understand what more you really need. The town hired a consultant. The selectmen hired the consultant. Their own consultant said to do pretty much what Peter is suggesting, to have a transfer station open and do curbside pickup with pay-as-you-throw bags. So I'm not sure why they're not listening to their own consultant. That doesn't make sense to me. And also, if it doesn't work, you don't